one more question for you guys. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, your thoughts?
She's a badass.
Man.
Oh, my God.
Yay.
I love her.
Yes. Wow. What a woman.
Amazing.
And again, the same.
Yes. I mean, she's asking the right questions. I don't feel like she's playing games. I'm so excited about her. She is smart. She is intelligent. And I cannot wait to see what else she does.
Well, I know she's got the Democratic Party nervous. And I mean, in a way, they should be nervous.
Sure.
Because, you know, she does represent the new guard, the new generation. I think she really kind of personifies, you know, where we expected things to go.
She is the candidate of the future.
Hey, everybody. It is Friday, March 8th. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, what? You haven't heard of H.R. 1 for the People Act? You know, the first major piece of legislation being put forward by the new Democratic House majority focused on anti-corruption and voting rights? I wonder why. Oh, yeah, that's right. House Democrats decided to devote the entire week to going after Ilhan Omar for what some claim to be anti-Semitic comments. There you go. Can I just throw in this one here for a second?
Oh, he's a doctor.
Yeah, that's right. But as both Sam Cedar from the Majority Report and Ben Ehrenreich, writing in the New Republic, argued this week, there is a little bit of gap, some daylight between what people are accusing Omar of saying and what she actually said. After sparking internal chaos, party chaos for the whole week, Pelosi and House Democrats decide instead on a resolution condemning all anti-Semitism and hate, not directly censuring Omar. You can check out the full resolution to see how, you know, it is. We're going to talk extensively about this. H.R. 1 will be voted on today. You know, the For the People Act, Anti-Corruption and Voting Rights Act. It's going to be voted on today, but you don't expect to see much of that in the corporate media. Paul Manafort, sentence. Not for 19 to 24 years in prison, as called for in the federal sentencing guidelines. Nope, he'll get more of, I don't know, slap on the wrist. The judge says that Manafort has lived an otherwise blameless life. Seriously, that's what he actually said. I kid you not. Well, AOC jumps in on that one and says the light sentence for Manafort only underscores what most Americans already suspect. That, quote, in our current broken system, justice isn't blind, it's bought. She's so bad at messaging, Sean. Trump seems to be relishing in the idea of discrediting the 2020 elections well before the campaign shifts into high gear. And Brad DeLong, a Clinton-era self-proclaimed neoliberal centrist, says, you know what? It's time to turn over the reins of power to the Democratic Socialists in the party. How about that?
We've come a long way, baby.
In today's PA Focus, PA GOP turns to Facebook to use the dust-up over Ilhan Omar's comments to attack Summer Lee. And no, not racist at all. No. No. Just kind of people saying stuff is all. Why Summer Lee exactly, I wonder. How far left is too left? Well, why don't we go ask some old white Pennsylvania Democrats? And they seem to be concerned that Trump may win 2020 if the party goes too far to the left. Because there's no energy, no passion, no organizing ground on the left. It's all in where? In the centrists? Right? Is that where it is? All those organizing efforts? Right there? Do you remember what happened in 2016? No? Well, let's remind you. And Russ Diamond wants to end daylight savings time as we know it. Bring it on. Bring it on. In today's last call, the SpaceX Crew Dragon makes a successful first test mission. Crew Dragon had two passengers, Ripley, yes, Ripley, the space dummy, and an Earth plushie. It was so cute. Canada announces its space strategy that will focus on the Lunar Gateway AI and deep space robotics. Canada's getting in the game something serious lately. And China wants to build the world's first solar power station in space. There's a movie, by the way, it's a New Zealand movie from the, maybe the 80s, maybe. It's called Quiet Earth. And as this stuff gets ramped up, I suggest that people watch it. We'll talk about that in today's Last Call. Free Will, set to release the first of its new Brewers series on Saturday. This week, it's a cream ale. Yeah, you heard me right. It is a cream ale. And it's highlighting a favorite recipe designed and brewed by Free Will's own Hannah Goda. Goda, I think her name is. Godi? Goda? G-O-H-D-E. Read all about it. And also on Saturday, Free Will releases Tangerine Micromosa. Mimosa-inspired IPA with tangerines, hopped with Mosaic, Cascade, Centennial, and Ukianot? How do you say that, Sean?
What's that?
E-K-U-A-N.
Ukianot.
Ukianot. All right, there you go.
Want to remind everybody? Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, well, that's new. That's uncharacteristic. I want to remind everybody to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. While you're at it, check out Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. And, folks, we're going to need to ramp up some of the memberships here. We've had a couple people drop off, right? And I recognize that part of that is on us, since we've been a little lackluster over the past couple months in terms of getting out new content as we go through some kind of reorganization and stuff. But as we're starting to ramp back up, I hope you saw some of our newest writer who published her first piece this past week. We're going to need to ramp some of this up as we move into 2020. You can support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress today and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click that big blue donate button in the right sidebar. You can drop us how much ever you want. But the best way to support what we do, this podcast, our website, progressive Pull No Punches homegrown reporting, is go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a member for as little as $5 a month. Hey, Sean, man, how's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah, going pretty good.
How are you?
I'm okay. You know, back into the little of the deep freeze, like once again. So
it is above freezing today. So the thaw is going to be happening pretty soon.
The thaw is coming. Yes. You know what I'm thinking about? That just makes me, when I just said that, it makes me think I gotta break out Trumpy Bear again pretty soon.
Oh yeah? Your patriotism going?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a little lacking on this. I think I need Trumpy Bear to shield me from the takeover of our government by Muslims, right? As we saw this past week. Because we have somebody who is elected and she is Muslim. There's actually two of them, Sean. I think we all got to freak out. What do you say?
Yeah, you know.
Trumpy Bear will protect us.
I'm actually thinking about getting my brother a Trumpy Bear.
Really?
He has a housewarming party coming up.
Oh, man, perfect.
And he's in a field where he doesn't want people knowing that he is, like, as conservative as he is.
Uh-huh.
So he just doesn't talk politics with his friends, and his friends don't know that he's like a closeted Trump supporter, him and his wife. So this might be a really good opportunity to break out the Trumpy Bear and bring it over to the party as a housewarming gift.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
We'll see if I get invited back.
I love it. You know, we have, I think we even have, so just if people don't remember what that is, let me see, do I still have this or not? I don't know if I still have it. I don't think I have it. Oh, wait. Ready?
The wind whispered through the forest. A storm is coming. You cannot defeat the storm. From the trees rose a resounding voice. I fear nothing. I come when the trumpet sounds. I am the storm, the great American grizzly. Introducing the original Trumpy Bear.
There it is, everybody. The original Trumpy Bear. I'm so glad I still had that sound drop.
So is this like a self-parody?
I actually don't think it is. I think it's I still don't know.
Is it a grifter?
Yes. Someone... I mean, I think it's all about money. I mean, like, the whole thing is about money.
Yes.
Right? And I think that...
Are they a right-wing or left-wing grifter?
I think they're green-wing, right? Like, I think they're all right, all about the money. I think that's all it is. And I think they... I think they... That they... know that there's two different kinds of markets that are going to go for this, and they don't care. They don't care who it is.
I mean, if I had like absolutely no morals,
mm-hmm.
and like a few hundred thousand dollars to make like initial investment,
yeah,
I would totally do something like this.
It's totally, it's great.
I mean, just like scam. I mean, it'll just be like another way to scam like old people, pretty much like out of their life savings with like reverse mortgages and, you know, like other things and like, you know, the diaper commercials that are on there and all. Like, this is like, yeah, why not? Like, put a 2-minute TV spot up there and suck away at the life savings of some of these people and make money off of it. Get rich quick.
Well, and even you can see, even in the commercial, if you actually watch the video commercial of Trumpy Bear, it's if you got you know, they have like the biker, right? As kind of one of the figures, and I actually think that is purposeful. I think that's part of the target. Like, you know, you take Trumpy Bear and you kind of strap it to the handlebars of your bike as you're kind of like, you know, you got your like Trump's Angels jacket on or whatever.
And I think like a Trumpy Bear with some assless chaps and a leather jacket,
exactly,
and a hat.
There you go.
Like,
there you go. That's the future. That's the future, man. Mad Max, man. Fucking bring Thunderdome. Bring Thunderdome. But okay, all right. So I don't know. This is my long delay into getting today's show. It's like this past week has been so damn frustrating for me. And so let me just set the table here to borrow Michael Brooks' saying. So this week was supposed to be, and like, let me say this first, even before that. I want to definitely plug, if you go in the show notes today and you click on the Sam Cedar from Majority Report link, right, about this, go and listen to this because it's one of the best breakdowns of kind of what's going on and what the problems are. And when I heard it, I'm like, yep, this echoed exactly kind of what was going through my mind. There's also an excellent piece by Ben Ehrenreich in the New Republic that is called, what's the name of it? The Shameful Campaign to Silence Ilhan Omar. And check that one out too as well, because I think they're going to do a better job, I think, than I can, certainly. And we can in this discussion to really lay out some of the particulars. But so here's the deal. The table set for this, H.R. 1, which basically is called the For the People Act, was set to debut and vote this week. And my understanding is still it's set to be voted on today, right? Mm-hmm. Unless that's changed, I'll have to look at that as we're looking at as we're kind of going through the show today. But instead of spending the week, right, they announced that they were going to come forward with this back in February, right? Or I think even January, they kind of like telegraphed it. In February, they said they're going to send it out. Okay, here it is. Now it is out. Now this week they're going to vote on it. So instead of spending the week talking about this bill, right, and talking about what this bill would do, and the fact that Mitch McConnell, right, in the Senate has already said he won't even allow a vote on it. So instead of that, the news being the Democratic Party targeting Mitch McConnell and underscoring what, like, they're trying to prevent, the expansion of voter rights, trying to
and that the party targeting Brian Kemp for investigations, voting rights investigations.
Right. So instead of all that, right, instead of doing all this stuff and really kind of, you know, this could have been the launch, official kind of like party launch going towards 2020 in terms of setting the agenda. Instead, right, the Democratic Party leadership spent the entire freaking week figuring out how they are going to censure Ilhan Omar for comments that she made that had some people concerned that they were anti-Semitic comments. And as soon as the accusation was leveled, right, and they looked at her comments this week, then it all became about, like, how does the Democrats rush to get out in front of the Republicans and then try to kind of say how bad one of their own members are, right? I mean, that's kind of what happened this week.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, so I said, so this comes to a conclusion. The original was going to be a proposal that they were going to have a resolution to censure Ilhan Omar by name, right? Then there was a blow up in the party, right, over what they were planning on doing with the kind of more progressive, especially kind of newly elected members of the House, in open revolt, really, about the establishment Democrats trying to move ahead with this. And so finally, it turned into a resolution that was not going to be censuring Ilhan Omar, but instead was going to be a resolution condemning all anti-Semitism and hate. Right. So anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim rhetoric, white nationalist stuff, all this kind of stuff together. Right. So it's going to be the catch-all. And it was not going to mention Ilhan Omar by name. And that got voted and it got approved like overwhelmingly. Right. The vote was something.
And this is like after the Democrats did nothing on a Republican who yelled, go back to Puerto Rico, to a Democrat, you know, right before the new Congress took order.
And this is that. I mean, look, they are rushing out ahead. Like, I mean, let's remember. It was the white nationalists, spurred on by Trump's words, that went out and executed, like Jews outside a synagogue in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
Or in a synagogue. I mean, it was that. And where was the frickin' resolution condemning hate at that point? It wasn't there. We did not see that. And where have the resolutions coming out of the Republican House kind of like going after all the white nationalist, anti-Semitic, racist crap that is kind of coming out of both Congress and the White House? Not happening.
Yeah.
And this is all about image. This is about the Democratic Party trying to kind of show that they've got the moral upper hand on this. And it was short-sighted. And it was not careful, and as a result, not only did they kind of like step in it, but now they've lost the momentum for the launch of their really signature first piece of legislation. It's like political chaos and deeply, deeply problematic, which we can get into.
And this is coming off a party that last week you had Pelosi and other leaders telling members of the House, that Republicans have never lost a procedural vote as majority members in the 8 years they had the House. Democrats have lost two procedural votes within the past three weeks since the session started. And Pelosi was telling members, especially the conservative members, if you keep voting, you got to put these votes up because you're a Democrat. Like you're with us. And you can't be losing these procedural votes on the House floor to the Republicans while other Democrats who are in just as tough of a situation as they're in vote with us, right? And she basically said, like, those members are going to get prioritized for money, for resources when getting reelected, once the elections come around. Well, you actually have to, like, go around the same way and use that same logic to – you can't be, like, browbeating members of the Progressive Caucus for stuff that they're saying, which really is pretty mild peace – pretty mild stuff to begin with, what Ilhan Omar said. You can't be browbeating them because they all actually they have more power now. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like you it's this dynamics of like you want, like last week you're yelling about like, you know, as a leader you want the party to be unified, but this week you're voting on a resolution that singles out a black, a woman of color, and a Muslim woman,
right,
on the same time.
So
And just like one, the optics, you're telling a bunch of white conservative members last week, vote with us because of unity. And this week you're going after a woman of color because of her, you know, fairly mainstream left views on Israel.
Yep, exactly. And this is something that Sam Cedar talks about, right? You know, talks about the criticism of Israel in the United States. Like all the polls come out, show that 75% of American Jews, right, are critical of Israeli policy when it comes to how they're dealing with Palestine, especially, right. And so this is a kind of a mainstream, in many ways, position. But when you're in the halls of Congress, it's not, right. But let's be a little careful here. I want to say a couple things here, and then I want to read a little bit from Ben Ehrenreich's piece. So just so we kind of see that this is not simply a knee-jerk response to Ilhan Omar, right? Saying no, we're going to defend her at all costs, right? And forget what goes on, because if you remember, like the first dust up came from a comment or a tweet that she made. Right, that was in response to kind of Israeli policy, and she said it was all about the Benjamins, right? And what she was clearly referring to was kind of like AIPAC, for example, right? The kind of like, you know, the kind of right wing kind of Israel at all costs lobbying organization that puts tremendous amounts of pressure on members of Congress, right, to have like kind of like a uncritical kind of 100% support of Israel policy, even when it comes to anything that they do, basically Israel, you have to support it, right? That's kind of the AIPAC, right? And AIPAC is also one of the kind of key supporters of AIPAC are these kind of right wing kind of religious fundamentalists who believe you have to protect Israel so that eventually when God can come down and destroy the Jews so that these fundamentalists can kind of take over, right? You know, I mean, so that is all the background, right? It's a really so that was her comment. When the kind of people from the Jewish community had come out and talked about that and say that that was hurtful and they were concerned about that precisely because of longstanding anti-Semitic tropes, right, about Jews just kind of like, you know, about using international money that could control things and all this. And to her credit, Ilhan Omar came out and said, okay, I really should have been more careful. John said this, and I'm sorry for even kind of like unintentionally stepping into that trope, right? And so that was the first round, right? Now, let's remember is that, you know, she's Muslim, right? And she wears a hijab, right, on the floor. And so she's already in the crosshairs, literally, of a whole number of kind of right-wing groups, right? I worry for her safety, to be honest with you. But so there's that. The next round, what happened this week, right, was a comment that she made in as part of a panel, right, which basically said this. It said that she or any member of Congress should not have to pledge like allegiance to a foreign country in order to serve on committees or do their jobs in the Congress. That was almost instantaneously turned into saying that she was saying that Jews have dual loyalty. And that was a problem. And of course, dual loyalty, the claim of dual loyalty, has a long anti-Semitic tradition, right? But as soon as that was being said and putting this kind of saying, this is anti-Semitism kind of put out there, what she was actually saying was lost, right? So what just happened, right? So Let me read this. This is a little bit from Ehrenreich, right? So say here, Omar was just beginning to catch her breath from last month's controversy in which she had been labeled an anti-Semite for calling attention to the outsized influence of AIPAC money in American politics. Such accusations, she observed, effectively end all conversation. Quote, nobody ever gets to have a broader debate about what's happening with Palestine, she continued. For me, I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it's okay to push for allegiance to a foreign country, right? That was the comment that got her in trouble. Let me just follow that up. Omar went on to ask why she was permitted to speak out about other powerful lobbies, the NRA, fossil fuel industries, pharmaceutical companies, and not about Israel. But that bit would not be quoted in the storm of coverage that followed her remarks. All attention went to just five words, allegiance to a foreign country. Never mind that Omar was talking about politicians and not about Jews at all. Right? This has been Ehrenreich's piece where he kind of teases this out and say, this is kind of what happened. And so as a result, because, and look, and I want to say, and I said this to Sean before the show too, it's like, I totally understand, right? If I, you know, about being hyper vigilant about watching any kind of anti-Semitic discourse seep into kind of American politics, right? I mean, if you're a Jew today, right? I mean, you've got enough like historical references, historical examples of why you have to be vigilant, right? There's a reason why we say never forget, right? So, but that is something distinct from what we're having here in terms of the influence of a particular lobbying organization in terms of the influence that is having on politics. And part of what she's talking about too as well, and this is why it's important for you to listen to what Sam Cedar had to say in terms of like responding to one of his listeners. One of the things he kind of teases out that, for example, right, people may or may not be familiar with the BDS movement, right, which the BDS movement is kind of like boycott,
divestment.
Yeah, boycott, divest, right, sanction. And sanction, right? And that was kind of like, and that has become the target of the right, right? And several on the left too as well, who believe that targeting Israel in that way is kind of is unfair or at worst anti-Semitic, right? I want to put aside just for a second whether or not, right, you agree, right? Anybody agrees with the BDS movement, right? There's kind of a much more kind of like involved conversation. But about half the states in the country, right, have passed laws that have said that if you want to say even run for office in some case, but or if you want to have a contract, a state contract, right, as a business, you have to basically sign a pledge that says I will not support the BDS movement or I support Israel. Right, that's the kind of thing that she's talking about, and that is a movement that is backed in part by big money coming out of groups like AIPAC and these right-wing conservative Republican and, groups.
Yeah, and evangelical Christians.
Right.
Who peddle, like their religious philosophy peddles this anti-Semitism. And like, a couple of things. One, their religious philosophy completely shuts down any discussion anyone can have over Israeli foreign politics, because they see Israel, the recreation of Israel, as end time prophecies coming true from the Book of Revelations, and so they want to hold that. They want Israel to hold on to as much power and be as strong as they want in order to see end time prophecies. Like this is like the fucking like our philosophy and our foreign politics around Israel. And really what's happening right now is based in crazy evangelical fundamentalist Christianity. And then these are the same people who will use that bullshit, their bullshit religious beliefs to go after, to spread these anti-Semitic tropes at the same time.
Right.
Going after the Tom Steyers, the using the money, the Tom Steyers and the other, I forget.
No, I mean,
they're the ones who perpetuate those tropes, and their religious ideology is steeped in anti-Semitism.
Right.
Like state must exist for us, our religion to fulfill its end time prophecies.
Right. No, exactly. And, you know, and that's just crazy. And the number of times that Republicans, these kind of right wing Republicans that are influenced by this kind of religious fundamentalist kind of wing of that, have had the number of times they've had to pull down tweets that they've made. Right. Because of the fact that they've been anti-Semitic, and there's been virtually no response or kind of like call out of these folks has been crazy. Right. Soros is what you're looking for. Right.
Yeah. George Soros and Tom Steyer. And
right. This is kind of what we see.
It's.
Right. And I want to give one more bit of context from this. This is also for Aaron Reich's piece, too, as well, is that why is it that Omar was making these comments now? Right. So here's this last piece I'm going to read from this. And it's this quote. Okay, so Omar, however, was not actually hauling out an old dual loyalty trope. Rather, the Minnesota representative was questioning a situation in which American politicians, the overwhelming majority of whom are not Jewish, have for years, with near unanimity, fought to quash all public criticism of an actual foreign country. No fewer than 26 states have passed legislation punishing businesses and individuals who, to protest Israeli policies towards Palestinians, support the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Right? Some require anyone who wishes to do business with a state to sign an oath declaring that they do not boycott Israel. Others create official blacklist of BDS supporters. And here's the key part. The U.S. Senate's first legislative priority in January, after a five-week government shutdown, was to pass a bill authored by Marco Rubio that gave a federal blessing to the state and local anti-boycott laws. Predictably, when Rashida Tlaib spoke out against it, tweeting that the Senate bill's backers forgot what country they represent, Rubio slammed her for taking, quote, a typical anti-Semitic line. Right. So this is its roots. Right. The Senate comes back after keeping the government shut down for 5 weeks. First thing that it wants to do is nationalize this oath taking. Right. And that justifiably right, raised concerns of folks, especially who were kind of folks who've been advocates for Palestinians for a long period of time. By saying advocates of Palestinians is not the same thing as saying anti-Israel. Okay, so that's part of the context. So why am I spending the time with that, right? Well, one, because I fully recognize that this very easily is a conversation that if you start having this conversation and just make it about two sides, right, then it what happens is the specific thing that is happening at this gets lost, and the ability to actually tease out what is kind of anti-Semitic and what is a justifiable criticism, right? And that's an important discussion. If we can't have that discussion, right, then we're screwed, right? And this is the same kind of thing. And by pointing to AIPAC, right, and this is why I think, once again, I think Omar is right on the money, is to point that it's the same kind of logic with the NRA and some of these other like the oil and gas industry lobbyist groups, that they do the same kind of stuff. Right, that's where the money is in politics is having a really negative effect, and actually to the point where it's squashing our ability to have serious policy considerations. Right, so that's the background there for that table. The other side of it is that, so that's again what I find deeply problematic. The second thing is, like, this goes back to the Democratic Party in terms of like the Democrats being so quick to want to hop on the bandwagon and kind of go after Omar, which is kind of like playing off all sorts of anti-Muslim tropes, right, in order to target her for censure and to play the cultural warrior game all week instead of setting the agenda and moving forward. Because now their signature piece of legislation, which is going to the floor, it's going for the vote, is going to happen, and virtually nobody knows what's going on, right? So I'll pause at that point. Right. I mean, you know what I'm saying, Sean?
Yeah. No, I completely understand. But Democrats going to Democrat.
Democrats going to Democrat. And here's, you know, and this is troubling. And so not only.
I mean, it's that Michelle Wolf thing. Oh, he's a doctor.
Oh, somehow he's a doctor.
Yeah.
Like, you'll like Jeffrey Nazi doctor.
Here you go. Here it is. Michelle Wolf, everybody.
People think you might flip the House and Senate this November, but you guys always find a way to mess it up. You're somehow going to lose by 12 points to a guy named Jeff Pedophile Nazi Doctor. Oh, he's a doctor.
Yeah, I know, not exactly the same thing. Like, in that case, it's like the Democrats, it was starry-eyed for kind of like anybody who's a professional and kind of like is successful.
No, I mean, like, they always find a way of fucking things up.
Right.
And they are their own worst enemy most of these times.
Right. And, you know, and I have to say what's been disappointing about this, too, as well, is because I think that the Democrats have been pretty disciplined thus far. Right. And the progressives have had a major, major influence on the direction of the policy and stuff. And to screw up your first launch of this, to engage in this kind of like, you know, personalization and attack is just deeply troubling.
Yeah.
Right. So what have you had a chance to look much at what the piece of legislation actually was?
No.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. So here's what, in the hopes that we actually kind of like we actually could get back to this at some point, right? This piece of legislation, two things that are going on. The legislation, which is what's called the It's called the For the People Act, right? It's called HR 1, right? House Resolution 1, right? Is basically, what they're trying to do is basically put this thing, which would do a couple things. One, it would help defend voting rights and expand voting rights, and it would be an anti-corruption piece. So, for example, voter registration would be made easier. The bill would crack down on efforts to take voters off the rolls or prevent them from casting ballots. Right? Felons could regain their voting rights. Federal elections would require paper ballots. Right? It would be a federal election holiday, right, for federal workers. Right? So that's kind of huge stuff there. Under campaign finance, parts of this legislation would be to expand the prohibition on foreign political money and mandate the disclosure of big donors behind politically active 501c4s, right? All the dark money groups. digital companies like Facebook and Google would have to set up public databases cataloging political ad purchases. Presidential inaugural committees would have to disclose expenditures. A matching fund program to make it easier for people to use only small dollar donations. Under ethics, right, presidents and vice presidents, surprise, surprise, would have to release their tax returns. Presidents-elects would need ethics plans for their transition teams. House members would be barred from serving on corporate boards. House members would be forbidden to use taxpayer money to pay penalties for employment discrimination. The Supreme Court would have to get a code of ethics, something it never had, which I didn't realize. Right? And laws regulating foreign domestic lobbying would be expanded. Right? That right there, that's huge. That is absolutely huge. And we've heard how much about it this week, Sean?
Well, I heard a little bit about it because I don't listen to the corporate news, but
fair enough.
I listen to Majority Report and other podcasts. So,
well, there you go. There you go. So, there you keep it. It's pretty amazing. So, yeah. So we'll see. My understanding is that this is to be voted on today. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just saying yeah. I think that's the case. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, that's the stuff that's been kind of like front and center in my mind the past couple days. And just had to put that out there. So meanwhile, what'd you think of the whole Manafort thing this week, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
It is
sort of
what
surprised
is.
He's only getting 4 years in jail.
Yep.
Not even.
Yep, 4 years. Yeah, less than 4 years in jail. He still has to be sentenced in D.C. Legal observers kind of were coming out of the woodwork to say, like, what? He only got what? And the judge was pretty remarkable. I mean, basically saying that doing the poor Manafort thing, right? The guy was a Boy Scout at one point. You know, I mean,
yeah, might have had some people killed along the way, but he's a good guy overall.
He's a good guy overall.
You know. I know. I mean, it shows you, like, the fucking way these people get treated, like Elliot Abrams and Paul Manafort and Roger Stone.
Yeah.
I mean, these people can cause fucking genocide and they'll still get off no prison.
Yep. And there you go. I mean, there you go. And this is the people we're bringing in. So this was a I have to say is like that was when I heard that first news, it kind of like was a thump in my stomach, right?
It's almost like the Taibbi book, Divide.
Where, yeah, like, no one gets,
you know, yeah. You got two justice systems.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And then we saw that, and, you know, I can't help but think that that is like, you know, sends a message to everything. And I think, well, the good news is that there's enough people that are mobilized that are going to see this. They're going to see that these kind of, you know, just as AOC said, right, that our current system is broken. Justice isn't blind. It's bought. I think that's just going to confirm everyone kind of like who's been organizing that. Yep. All the more reason that we got to kind of like take control of the House and Senate and the presidency to move forward, because this has got to end. So I was also pleased to see this week that that Trump is after hearing Michael Cohen come out and say that Trump is not going to allow for a peaceful transfer of power. He's kind of like, you know, he's leaned into that. That's for sure. Trump is he's got his people.
Put that ball, he took the ball and ran with it.
Oh, did. He's like, oh, Michael, man, you're still advising me even as you're testifying against me. Yeah. So Trump is already introducing questions about there's no way that Democrats can win in 2020 without some shenanigans, without playing illegal. All sorts. What's that?
The caravan.
Right. All sorts of stuff.
Caravan's making a comeback.
Exactly.
I guess they're going to hack elections. Mm.
Yeah, he's going to start doing it. So be prepared for this, everybody. He's already got his spokespeople out there talking about how the Democrats are going to try to steal the election. So Michael Cohen gave us the warning, and Trump was like, I like that warning. That sounds very good.
That's,
I like that.
That's from my Twitter bio, Sean Kitchen, stealing elections. It's 2016.
There you go.
Stealing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So we'll be paying attention to that stuff coming forward, because
I mean, it's really not a professional thing to put in your Twitter bio.
Well, yes.
The master of stealing elections.
Yeah, there you go. But I guess the most satisfying piece of news for the week for me, or thing that came out, this is something they talked about in the Majority Report yesterday, too, as well, or 2 days ago, I guess, or maybe yesterday. I don't know. But I was hoping to be able to pull some sound from this, but I just didn't. Brad DeLong, he worked for the Clinton administration, and he's a self-proclaimed kind of like neoliberal, right? He says, "I am a neoliberal," right? And he basically has said, "You know what? We have pretty much screwed up as much as we can as neoliberals, especially politically. And so basically what we need to do is we need to hand over the reins of the party to Democratic Socialists," right? So he actually says, well, in here, and this is DeLong, this is kind of a summary from Vox. He says, DeLong believes that the time of people like him running the Democratic Party has passed. Quote, and this is DeLong, "The baton rightly passes to our colleagues on our left," DeLong wrote. "We are still here, but it's not our time to lead." Right? The core reason, DeLong argues, is political. Right? The policies he supports depends on a responsible center-right partner to succeed. They're premised on the understanding that at least a faction of the Republican Party would be willing to support market-friendly ideas like Obamacare or cap-and-trade system for climate change. This is no longer the case, if it ever was. Quote, Barack Obama rolls into office with Mitt Romney's health care policy, with John McCain's climate policy, with Bill Clinton's tax policy, and George H.W. Bush's foreign policy, DeLong notes. Quote, and did George H.W. Bush, did Mitt Romney, did John McCain say a single good word about anything Barack Obama ever did over the course of the solid 8 years? No, they fucking did not, he said.
I laughed at this, like, when I heard that, and I laughed again now. Because it's like, boy, you fucking listened to us.
Yep.
11 years? It's now, it's 10 years, 11 years since this happened.
Yep.
And now you start to fucking listen to us?
Yep, exactly. And now,
at least, like, you're handing over the keys, the controls of this, like, runaway train.
Yep.
To, like, the DSA people. It's like, okay, well, we fucked up. Yep. We're going off the cliff. You want to have at it?
Yep, there you go. There you have it. Like, now, let's be clear here. So that the one thing that DeLong is not doing, he is not saying that his policies and the policies of neoliberals like him were wrong, right? So he's still a supporter of that, right?
He's just saying it would have been easier if we would have just fucking worked with, start off from the big picture ideas and work our way down instead of, like, working ourselves into these technocratic holes from the fucking start.
Well, he's saying in particular, right? Let's be good. What he's saying is politically, right, the way that whole premise of that agenda is that there's some reasonable people in the Republican Party that you're going to work with, right? The center right folks. So you're going to work for from the center, like with all the other unicorns, right? So you're going to work from that center, and then you're going to kind of, like, that's your coalition, and they'd be willing to partner with that, right? And say, no, that's not happening, right? That's gone. And I think that Jamie from the Majority Report had the absolute – this is the sound that I actually wanted to pull, and I just didn't have it. And I know you haven't watched Game of Thrones yet, but you need to watch Game of Thrones here because I think –
Bend the knee.
What's that?
She said bend the knee.
She said bend the knee. That's what this is. And it's the absolute best way of understanding what he said.
Top of the Trap House had a segment last year about it's time for, like, the Clintons of the world to bend the knee to us.
Yes.
And they went after them for misogyny and bro-ish humor when they were just basically saying the same point. Like, no, fuck the centrists. It's time they bend the knee.
Right. And here you have DeLong coming and saying, I'm going to bend the knee. Right. And so why that, you know, if you watch Game of Thrones, like, I think it's such a smart way of thinking about it, just in part because, you know, it's not saying that they're giving up their fiefdom. Right. It's not like they're kind of like they're now converts. Right. But they've said, nope, the center of this rule has shifted to the Democratic Socialists, the folks on the left. Right. And then we are going to say we have a new queen. Right. AOC. We have. And we are going to bend the knee, and you are going to be our new kind of kings and queens. I think that is an awesome way of understanding the power dynamics at work there. Right. And then he said, look, because if you're going to have, and, you know, he's very pragmatic about it. If you're going to have any influence whatsoever, right, there's no way you're not going to have anything on to the right, because the Republican Party is lost. Right. And so that was, to see that him come out and talk about that in such candid terms for someone who was like, you know, a Rubin Democrat, was pretty astounding. You know what I'm saying? All right. Sean's giving me the, come on, can we just please wrap this up thing signal? So I think we're going to have to go. Sorry, everybody.
One thing we didn't mention this week.
Yeah.
You didn't put in the intro.
That way, everybody get that? That I didn't put in the intro. Okay, just want to underscore that. This was my failure. Sorry.
I'm surprised that you forgot. The Dianne Feinstein parody from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Here's some fucking glue. I don't go to your classroom and tell you how to step the fucking glue.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, there's a more sound I should have pulled this week. We can come back to that in the fun half, or not the fun half. See, I've been talking too much about the majority part. We'll come back in today's last call. So, all right, Sean, anything else for the good of the order for this first part?
No, that's good.
No, Sean, I know I'm sorry we took so much time, because I know you got a lot to deal with in the PA stuff, so we'll get to that right away. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you, if you want to support this podcast, you want to support Progressive Pull No Punches Media, become a member of Raging Chicken Press today. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress, become a member for as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. You may know that March is Women's History Month, but did you know why it takes place each year in the month of March? It all goes back to today in labor history. The year was 1857. That was the day that hundreds of women working in New York City's garment industry went on strike. The women demanded better wages, safer working conditions, a 10-hour workday, and equal rights. In the years that followed the historic strike, March 8th became an important time for women workers to rally in the city. So on March 8th, 1908, a crowd of 15,000 women workers in New York took to the streets. The marching women demanded the right to vote, an end to sweatshops, and a halt to child labor. At the International Socialist Congress in 1910, a German woman named Clara Zetkin proposed March 8th be declared as International Women's Day. Women from 17 countries agreed, and over the years, the day continued to hold a special place for women in the labor movement. Women from Bangladesh to South Africa to Venezuela have held demonstrations for workers and civil rights on this day. By 1980, President Jimmy Carter declared the week surrounding March 8th Women's History Week. His declaration read in part, "Too often, the women were unsung, and sometimes their contributions went unnoticed. But the achievements, leadership, courage, strength, and love of the women who built America was as vital as of the men whose names we know so well." In 1987, the week was expanded, and March became known as Women's History Month. And it all started with garment workers who were not afraid to stand up for their rights, leading the way for countless numbers of other women who have bravely followed in their footsteps.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. We're in the PA Focus, and we got some little special segment here from Sean on what's happening this week in PA.
Is that what you took so long over the break to do?
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. What was that, Sean?
So just keep on hitting it for like 20 minutes.
What's that?
Just keep on hitting it for 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna do it for, here we go, everybody. Just if you didn't get it the first time, there we go.
It's a little light this week.
A little light this week. According to Sean, nothing's happening in the state this week.
We're coming off of 6 weeks of budget hearings.
Yeah.
And we're finally going to get into the session, the meat and bones of the session next week, and also.
Yeah, next week things start to ramp up again, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I mean, apparently if you watch, like, Read the Capital Star, There's a lot of things happening in the state, but, you know, a lot of it, yeah.
A lot of it requires some effort to find.
they got something to run over there.
This is how I try to figure out whether or not there's good stuff going on. I get up in the morning, I open my front door, and I listen. Nope, nothing going on today. Might as well go back to bed.
Well, now that kidding. The daylight savings this weekend, we're going ahead an hour. It's going to be dark.
Oh my God, that's going to really cramp your style
in the morning. So it might still be like that for a little bit longer.
There you go. Well, daylight savings time, everybody. There we go. So it wasn't entirely quiet this week, but. So just as kind of like a follow up for what we talked about in our first segment today, so I guess the PA GOP has not wasted any time in terms of kind of piggybacking on national politics this week, from what I understand.
Oh no, they never waste any time. Their attacks on people are so amazing. Like, they are gonna roll into 2020 thinking that using socialism is gonna work. Again, like they did last time and lost. Is this where I'm supposed to get into this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, you don't have to. I mean, you know, we can always just like. That's fine too. If that's
so yesterday the Republicans put an email out and social media posts to go with it, and a petition. A petition. They used the whole gamut of social media to warn us about the socialist flank of the House Democrats have dragged their feet in coming to a vote on a House resolution condemning anti-Semitism. They talk, and they go, "Worst yet, Congresswoman Omar." It's being defended by Democrat leaders and presidential contenders like socialist Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Here in Pennsylvania, she has garnered the support of avowed socialist state rep Summer Lee. And then goes on to say, if you, like us, believe letting this kind of conduct stand is simply unacceptable, please let your voice be heard and sign our petition that we will deliver to the Democrats in Washington so they know the importance of condemning hurtful rhetoric like that espoused by Congresswoman Omar.
There you have it. You know, I have to admit, one of the first things that went through my mind is like, I kind of when I saw this was, I was wondering if, like, you know, you had Costa actually went over to his friends over in the PA, PA GOP and said, "Hey, you guys, you do me a solid here."
It amazes me how, I mean, obviously they're blowing all the dog whistles,
exactly,
and waving all the flags. I mean, but it's amazing how, like, they're still using the socialist rhetoric, and they think that it's like their only. I mean, it's their only idea.
Yeah, well, that was if people watched anything what happened in CPAC or any of the reporting on CPAC last weekend. Right. Or last week, really.
That's all they got. They have no policy.
That's all they got. Right. And, you know, again, I in some ways I'm saying bring it on. I think Trump basically went up to CPAC and Trump basically was saying, like, the Green New Deal. Yeah. Keep that messaging. And that's like right across the board. And I think the PA GOP, I'm going to flip the script on this one. PA GOP should keep that messaging. Keep that messaging that, you know, you want to make sure that we do not have Medicare for all in this state, that we do not have free college tuition in this state, that we do not have voter rights protection in this state. I think that's a great messaging for the PA GOP. And yeah. So keep it going, guys. Keep it going. Double down. Please, for the love of God, please double down on that. Right. No more infrastructure spending. God damn, none of that stuff. No, please, guys.
More potholes.
Guys, more potholes. Exactly. Don't suppress. Like, don't try to kind of like oppress the potholes. People might choose to want to have potholes. Right. And who
it's not freedom to decide if you want to hit potholes.
Exactly.
Or not.
Exactly. It's not the government's role. Right. To tell people whether or not they should kind of have a pothole in their street. Right. Individuals should decide whether or not that pothole should be filled. If they want the pothole filled, they can stop their car, get out with the shovel that they left in their trunk, and shovel in some junk into that pothole to fill it up. But the person behind them might just stop and say, no, I wanted that pothole, and open that back up again. That's the world that we should live in. Right? So please, PAGOP, double down on your socialist rhetoric. I would love to see it.
So this is a really great segue into our next topic that we should probably spend some time on.
So that was the PAGOP.
And, yeah, so this week an article in the New York Times was written. I had many things to say about it. By Trip Gabriel. And the main premise of it is Pennsylvania Democrats wonder how far left is too left in 2020. How far is too far left in 2020? So basically, they talked to the same 10 Democrats as usual with these stuff. Talked to Ed Rendell, other people from Western PA. You know, so Rendell had a really good line saying that. You know, the more we have presidential candidates or newly elected congresspeople talking about the Green New Deal, talking about Medicare for all, talking about socialism, the more that plays into the Trump campaign's hands, said Ed Rendell.
Ed Rendell. Did you get that, everybody? Ed Rendell.
Yeah, so this is – I mean, like, here we go. And then reparations? What are we talking about? Rendell scoff. Having only renewable energy in 2030, it's not possible to achieve that. You know, it's just like, yeah, like this article is just, gotta read it. But no, it's really great to piggyback on this because it shows you that obviously the people in their 60s and 70s that are running the state still have not learned. People involved with the party still have not learned. There was a really, really great article, and I really think we're going to get a lot more of this bullshit that comes out.
Yep.
You know, in these big like articles about what the Pennsylvania Democratic Party used to be, right? And this is a really good quote of what the Pennsylvania Party used to be. It goes, Rob. So I'm going to read this couple paragraphs. Rob Coppler, retired deputy sheriff who agrees with the president on a border wall, voted for him in 2016. But in the midterms, he supported Mr. Lamb and Governor Tom Wolf, a Democrat. He's doubtful of any 2020 Democratic hopefuls will win him over. Quote, the Democrat Party let their people down. They were going so far into the different extremes, they forgot about who put them in office. The middle class white male. And this article... So, and this article laments on what Democratic Party used to be in Pennsylvania. This conservative, white, male, working class party that was, as long as you were there on labor, God and guns, like that was your base of the Democratic voters going in the 60s and 70s. But what you're not getting in these pieces is stuff like talking about how the roles have completely flipped. Southeastern Pennsylvania is now the powerhouse for this party. And the work that's getting done in the exurbs of like Allentown, Reading, Easton, and the Lancaster and Chester counties. Yeah. I saw you shaking your head there.
Yeah, it just baffles me.
Which one? On the quote? Which quote? Like the Rendell quotes or like the...
I'm just going through everything that you're saying just in terms of how the logic is unfolding about how the PA Democrats are understanding what we should be doing and where the center is and all this other kinds of stuff. It basically starts from the premise that everything is as it has always been. And we're playing basically for the same pie that we were playing with 20, 30, 40 years ago. And it's just not true. Right? If anything that we've seen is, that has fundamentally transformed kind of politics nationwide has been, you know, kind of a shift to the arts of the possible, not the arts of the limitations.
And also, like, I feel like with these articles and what we've finally seen in state government over the past 6 or 8 years – like, there was no reason from 2010 to 2016 to have old white men from Western Pennsylvania leading the caucuses within the House of Senate for the Democratic Party, right? Like, what happened in Western Pennsylvania, steel industry collapsed. That base of supporters in those towns, from that industry, those union members crumbled, fell apart, moved, left the area, or stayed there, and are now your Republican base. Yep. Like Democrats lost that density of voters. They are never getting back the steel towns of Western Pennsylvania. And like, these articles lament that. And they're not focusing on like how Philadelphia, which was always, yes, you had Philadelphia, but the collar counties have always been Republican strongholds, are now realigning and becoming just solid blue counties. You know, Montgomery, Bucks is getting there, but Montgomery, Delco, and, you know, parts of Chester and Bucks County. And now, like, those gains that the Democrats are making are reaching out into the exurbs of the Philadelphia counties, going into Lancaster and going up into the Reading area and the Lehigh Valley, which is extremely important in the future of the state.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that
it doesn't talk about like the job Make the Road is doing up there. I mean, there's a lot of organizing going on in Lancaster, like in those ring of like that outer ring of the Philadelphia suburban exurbs that are going to eventually become Democrats and fill in within the next 10 years.
Well, and really the question is what kind of Democrats are they going to become? Right. I mean, I think that right now, like
I feel like they're going to come lockstep Democrats are going to be voting with the party from the Southeast.
Right. And I think, but
they're not going to be like that white male working class Democrat or that white conservative male Democrat from Western Pennsylvania.
Right. I mean, I think that part of what the deal is, right, is part of what the deal is that this is so frustrating to me. So part of what the deal is that there's going to be big sections. Look, the Republican Party has gone so far to the right that those areas that you're talking about, like the exurbs, Philadelphia, right, and all this kind of stuff, they're going to have no place left to go, right, other than to the Democratic Party. And that's already kind of part of that shift, is that they do not look at any Republicans, with the possible exception of Brian Fitzpatrick of the PA1, but I think even he has had to kind of like significantly move leftward just in order to keep his seat, just in terms, at least in terms of his rhetoric. And so that is like, so the Republican Party that they sees today, these folks do not see themselves in that at all.
If you're seeing out here in central Pennsylvania, the Republicans of the West Shore, you know, the Harrisburg suburbs,
yes,
are voting Democrat for the first time.
Exactly.
Because they're not like that. Like that party has just left them like up and gone.
Exactly. And that's an important fact to remember. Right. Because what had happened, you've got to remember, like a lot of the losses that Democrats incurred. Right. And why people left the party had everything to do with the fact that the Democratic Party moved too far to the right. Right. That the kinds of things that the Democratic Party had been known for, at least, and had seen solid, was the fact that it was pro-labor, right? That it was the party that spoke for kind of like the working class, right? And that is like, you know, within big quotation marks within the United States. Like the idea that, you know, our working class politics in this country are so far already like to the right compared to kind of the rest of the developed world. But put that aside. Like that at least was what was the home of kind of like, you know, working class, middle class Americans. And those Democrats, that Democratic Party left them because they moved to the right and they moved to the kind of the wealthy and the Wall Street and the Silicon Valley people. Right. And so then, yes, you had a whole bunch of people that were left behind. And it was left behind both in terms of like people of color, right, who their issues were no longer front and center. Right. Unless we're talking about some sort of kind of like data analytics of kind of like how we understand what kind of race, or being taken for granted by the party that there's a solid vote because there was no place else for them to go. Right. And from workers. And I think maybe I'll turn out to be wrong about this, but I firmly believe that this is why I think that, say, Bernie Sanders could win this state. Right. I think even Elizabeth Warren would have a good shot, although. I do think that there still is a deep kind of sexism that is embedded in Pennsylvania politics. So I think that would be – that was one of the Hillary Clinton's barriers, I think, for a segment of the population. But I think that the ideas, right, the idea that we're standing up for the things that matter to everyday people, that is going to carry people, not to mention the fact that you've got – all the organizing, all the infrastructure work that is being done not by those white males. It's being done by people of color, by young people, that people are organizing and kind of demanding a different kind of future. People who are going to be on the front lines of climate change, people who are going to be on the front lines of kind of student debt, all that kind of stuff. This is what's going to matter to that generation. This is what's going to matter to where the organization is. So those factors together, like, point in the direction of that. No, and even in that New York Times article and some of the interviews that they've done with people, not like, you know, the freaking Ed Rendells of it, but some of the people, they keep on coming back to the idea there. And even Connor Lamb's brother, right, who's his political director, even in this article says that, look, it was people were not voting necessarily just about ideology. So it wasn't people saying, no, I want to have some more centrist. They wanted somebody they can trust. They were voting for the person. They wanted somebody who was authentic. Right. And this is, you know, Katie McGinty was a perfect example of someone who's inauthentic on the campaign trail. Whatever you think about her as an individual is that
I actually think mm-hmm. she lost. We lost Pennsylvania mm-hmm. because McGinty was at the top of the ticket.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't doubt it.
And I mean, I think like we even us observing the 2014 gubernatorial primary. And I mean, we were saying McGinty was going to be a complete total disaster when they picked her in 2016.
Yep.
But
you know, water under bridge, I guess, right? Lesson learned, not right. But I mean, that's just it. I mean, look for like there's people like us who are deeply involved and concerned about the policy, right? And I think that increasingly there's more people, right, especially younger generation, who are also interested in kind of the broad-based policy, Medicare for all, free college tuition, right? I mean, like Green New Deal, these are becoming kind of like the benchmarks, right? You got to have at least this if you're going to get our support.
So also, can I add this quote in there?
Yeah, please.
I think we're going to really like this.
Oh, good.
So it's about taking advice from Ryan Costello, the Republican.
Yeah, yeah. I have it right in my screen right here. Right, exactly.
Mr. Costello said that by nominating a progressive in 2020, he named Mr. Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, the general election would become a referendum on far left policies rather than the president. The whiplash on the left right now is, it's almost like they didn't learn the lesson of why they were successful in 2018. Mr. Costello said. Yeah. It's almost like the Pennsylvania Republicans have not learned why they fucking lost in 2018.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's like this guy, like, I mean, Costello comes up and says, like, they didn't learn why they were successful. I'm like, in what world are you living in?
Bro.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Bro. <That's>...
Look at all the gains that were made. Right. And, you know, the thing is, it's funny because, you know, a lot of the, like, people like Costello and then people in the PA Democratic Party, like even people like Rendell, they all want to kind of, like, you know, Connor Lamb.
Preserve this homogeny.
Yeah. Well, like, Connor Lamb is their unicorn. Right. It's basically they accuse the left of saying, well, you know, this doesn't, you know, that policy might play well in the kind of the urban areas, but it doesn't play well and blah, blah, blah. But they're doing exactly the same. They're saying, no, Connor Lamb, he's the magic key. He's the unicorn.
No, but you see, like, the Democratic, like, messaging, as we found out, this left messaging that Brian Costello was talking about worked really fucking well.
It wins. No, they're exactly knowing what they've learned the lesson.
And I feel like these voters, like, I am getting more confident that, like, these voters are, like, especially the wealthy suburbanites who switched over party lines.
Yeah.
I really don't think they care how far left the Democratic Party is going. Like, I don't see them swinging back to a Republican Party because Republicans are not going back to being the party. Like, this is the Republican Party. Like, this Trump didn't make the Republican Party what it is right now. Like,
right.
This is what they've been, and Trump is just enabling them to, like, be their themselves in the most base form.
Right. So, I mean, I can't let's make this concrete. Like, so I can't, like, a lot of what, you know, like the whole.
Like, you're talking about the soccer moms in, like, in suburban Philadelphia who are fluent. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm having healthcare issues too.
Well, or let's flip it around.
The ACA is really bad. But like, you know, maybe we should have I don't care if we have a Medicare for all position where it has universal health care and it takes down these useless, needless barriers of access to get to the.
No, yeah. Exactly. And let's just imagine this for a second. Let's talk about the exurbs and things like this. Let's talk about, you know, the magical yoga vote, right? That kind of had, like, that's come out here. So just imagine this, right? Because the image that emerged, right, you have these kind of, like, upper middle class kind of suburban women, right? Primarily white women became kind of like, oh, look, they're all kind of getting involved and stuff like this. Are you going to tell me, right, that you're going to have this, like, this woman who has now become activated, has become part of, you know, the kind of the women's movement, right? They're going to sit there, and if Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders at the front of the ticket, they're going to be like, you know, nah, they're a little too socialist. I'd rather go with the sexist, like, the guy in the White House now. So I'm going to vote for Trump. That is absurd.
No, they're voting for Howard Schultz.
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, it's like this. Look, I do believe that there will be people, right, that if it's Bernie Sanders is nominated or if Elizabeth Warren is nominated or somebody comes for, who knows, maybe some of these, you know, newly woke Democrats, right, are going to be like, you know, who are now suddenly like found their way to Medicare for all, right, and charter schools, but found their way to the Medicare for all, you know, these people. Maybe some of those kind of like, you know, newly involved kind of suburban families will look at that and they will hold their nose and vote for the Democratic Socialist, right? Or vote for those programs because they don't want Trump, right? But think about what that means, you know, saying, okay, so they're going to do that anyways because they're going to be reliably Democratic at this point, given what's happened with the Republican Party. So the question, I mean, so... I mean,
and like once you take over these counties and everything, like all the county commissioner spots and the row offices, you pretty much are going to have that county on lock with those ideologies anyway from then on out. Like it's
right. And we also know, like, I mean, come on, the people, we got to be freaking like people. When I say people, I mean, PA Democratic leadership. I mean, really is what we were talking about. I mean, you people drive me insane. Is that you've got the rest of the freaking developed world has these base things and they are not Medicare for all, free college tuition, all this kind of stuff is not a radical progressive policy. It is just the policy. It's just what people have in their lives. It's a depoliticized part of the social infrastructure of those countries. That is all we're talking about. And the fact that this is getting labeled like communist in some circles or far left is just disingenuous, right, at best.
And you know what the funny thing is, like, the more the Democrats, the more Republicans use the word socialist, the more it's going to get watered down, lose its meaning, and these policies are just going to become relevant.
That's right.
And it's happening. Like, it's absolutely happening right now.
That's right.
Like, yeah. It's,
and
yeah,
then and it, then and then maybe at that point you're going to start to see actually debates that will emerge from real left, right? From the real left, who will then the discussion will become over. Yeah, we just don't want a labor union. We want a kind of worker cooperative. We want direct worker ownership of this, you know, as an option. We'll talk about cooperatives, right? I mean, that would be actually a kind of like, and that's not even far left, right? I mean, what we're talking about here is just the baseline for like what we should have in this, especially. When you have got the most wealth of any country on the planet, and this is and we're that this becomes a problem. I mean, this becomes some sort of like, you know, Trojan horse or something like this. I mean, this is just freaking rational, people. And the thing is that once those policies are enacted, once we get Medicare for all, once we get free college tuition, guess what? All those people in the exurbs, right, that are good, you know, so important, right? They're going to see like, oh, you know what? Those concerns I had in the back of my head, those concerns that I was worried about because what I kept on hearing on Fox News or hearing on TV, they were really unfounded, that this is awesome. The fact that I no longer have to worry about kind of like, you know, how many forms I fill out for my freaking doctor and I can just go get medical care, this is actually pretty efficient. So.
Yeah. And then one of the things I think we haven't really talked about, but I think we should just throw out there, even though we're talking about the people in the exurbs, even like in the rural areas of Pennsylvania, what Governor Wolf's doing right now with the education, the teacher salary. Have you been following that?
Yeah. Yeah.
The base salary of like 45,000 starting point.
That's a huge.
I mean, there are school districts in central Pennsylvania and rural Pennsylvania, like Appalachia, like between like the Pennsylvania part of the state that will be getting millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars thrown into putting into their communities by doing simple things like putting a base salary of $45,000.
Yep.
Like that is what socialism is.
I mean, according to these people. Yeah, exactly. And imagine this. Imagine if you have
out your community, an extra $1 million into your community, your school district in salary and wages, what that will do to the surrounding area. I mean, it'll at least make life a bit better for your region.
Well, and think about this, right? There's actually been, there's been reports on this over the years too, as well, especially since Corbett has come in and how try to gut, you know, gutting public education and all this, is that students who are starting college, right, have been shying away from teaching as a profession, right? Because they see what's happening to schools, the defunding and all this other kinds of stuff. That if you are suddenly, this goes through and you start paying $45,000 to teachers, right, in particular communities, right, and that these are in most cases union jobs, right, with kind of benefits and things in here, and then you know now that you don't have to kind of move someplace else, right, necessarily to get to get a decent paying job, that you could actually be a teacher, right, and stay in your community and contribute positively to that community. I can't tell you how many students that I've had over the years, right, that's what they wanted, right, especially from rural communities. Like, they weren't looking to kind of like, you know, come to college so that they can get out of those communities and then go and then move to Philadelphia, right? There were people that had deep ties to their family and their community, but their concerns have always been, but what am I going to do there?
And like, so like a state representative made a comment about like his daughter wanting to become a teacher and leaving the state. And he said, yeah, well, like Governor Wolf wants your daughter to stay in Pennsylvania and teach here. And that's why we want $45,000 a year for a teacher salary.
Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine having high quality teachers who want to be here in rural school districts, for example, in kind of like inner city areas.
Who grew up in the area, pretty much.
Who grew up in the area, who knew the context, who knew the families who are invested in that community. And imagine saying that, no, they're going to stay there and they're going to contribute positively to that. That has kind of exponential effects, right, on communities. That used to be the case when we're talking about the state system of higher education, you know, how they designed it the way that it is. So that everyone was going to be like within reasonable driving distance or access kind of point to be able to go to a college that was kind of connected to their community. They didn't have to go away to college. They could go kind of down the road, kind of like a half an hour, 40 minutes in some cases, right, to a college in those communities, right? And it was built, right, initially to kind of like support kind of the teaching and education in those areas and distribute across the state. This is the same principle that's except at the level of K through 12. I mean, this is this potentially be a game changer in huge sections of the state. There's no doubt. And imagine what happens then also to the crisis that they've created in the inner city, right? Imagine what happens that is like now you have, instead of kind of teachers being forced to kind of like take whatever job that they can get in whatever charter school they can because they can't find a decent paying job closer to their hometown, so that they're going to reluctantly go to some kind of the more urban areas and teach in one of these charter schools, which then they're systematically abused as teachers. And now those same students are going to come out and say, you know what? Why would I do that when I can actually take a job, right, not far from where I grew up? And now those urban districts now, like who these charter schools and stuff, suddenly find that they're the ones who are going to have to worry about kind of attracting quality teachers. And then maybe we get some kind of leverage there too, as well, and kind of getting back to really investing in public K through 12 education. So we'll see, man. We'll see. Oh God, I'm just not looking forward to this weekend, though, Sean, because it's daylight savings time.
Well,
I don't know about you.
I actually prefer this.
You prefer daylight savings time?
Yes, I prefer what we do like in the summertime. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we should like do that and then end it. And so it's dark like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning in the winter. But Russ Diamond wants to put an end to that.
There you go. Go Russ.
Yeah. So when it's like, you know, in the summertime, it'll be sunny out at 4:30 in the morning.
Well, the question is, but wait, which one does he want to end, though?
I think he wants to, like, end the springing forward.
End the spring forward, not the fallback? You sure about that?
I'm not sure, but I haven't really read
it. That's where the battle lines are being drawn right now, Sean. You realize that.
But, I mean, I think he has a point. Daylight savings time is outdated.
How about we split the difference? Oh, we set the clocks half an hour forward or half an hour back and just leave it there. How's that? I'm for it, and we're done.
That would fuck things up.
Be awesome. And it'd be like Pennsylvania would be permanently like an asterisk. Right? The time in Pennsylvania, well, actually, because of this legislation, it was passed. Blah, blah. interviewing Russ Diamond at the time, he said, it sounded like a good idea at the time.
Right? And everyone agreed with him.
Exactly. It's like, well, we didn't realize it, but then we realized that, you know, every computer system that's out there doesn't have a half hour daylight savings time as an option. Oh God, it'd be funny. Crazy. This is something that comes up all the periodically. You think this actually has a chance to go in someplace?
No fucking way.
Yeah. Just another
knowing Russ Diamond, he did it just because.
He did it just because?
Yeah. He's goofy. He's very goofy, very far right, but he's actually a funny person to talk to.
Yeah. Well, you know, who's the government to control time, Sean? Who's the government to do it? American freedom. Restricting time's freedom. Oh, crazy. Well, go, Russ. Hey, man, give it the old college try, Gud. Go ahead, man. This is, you know, whatever. That's a hoot. I always like this time of year when you get this kind of legislation that gets offered because it's like, okay, sure. Why not? Let's have a debate about this and pretend it's going someplace. That's good. All right.
I wonder if I wouldn't sign on to the bill.
That's a good question.
I would sign on as a co-sponsor.
Well, yeah, I would do it. I'd do it. What the hell? Have at it. I'm not going to vote for it, but I'll go select it for it.
This is a pressing issue in the state. The more time they take up shit like this, the less time they're harming other people.
Well, there you go. All right.
That's a good thing. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. Win-win-win. Crazy. All right. Well, this is we're going to move.
But I am sure if you pay like a lobbyist $10,000, $5,000 a month. You could probably get this through the legislature.
Yeah, why not?
So if you're willing to pay anyone $5,000 a month, hint, hint, wink, wink.
Yeah, there you go.
let me make this happen for real.
There you go. Sean will do it, man. Sean will do it. Just hook him up, right? $5,000 to start, and then we can go from there. All right, good. Anything else?
That is what all the lobbyists do out here.
Well, there you go. Oh, man. So anything else going on in PA this week before we head off into the last call of the day?
Not really.
No? All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be right back with this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's the last call. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we talk space news, we talk beer, we talk whatever the hell else is just didn't fit anywhere else, and just kind of fun stuff for the week. In space news this week, big news, actually, SpaceX, the Crew Dragon. Remember, we talked about it on the show last week. The Crew Dragon, SpaceX got the kind of the Dragon capsule, which has been delivering supplies to the space station. Since the Obama administration has ended the space shuttle program back, when he was still in power, that most any kind of you want to get any people, actually human beings, up to the International Space Station, we've had to rely on the Russians in order to do that, right, to get up there through the Soyuz capsule. We've taken one step closer to be launching astronauts into space from U.S. soil once again through U.S. companies. The SpaceX Crew Dragon, which is basically a modified version of the Dragon capsule, which you can carry up to 7 astronauts to the International Space Station, made its first successful test this past week. It was freaking awesome. It was on Saturday night, I believe. I was trying to stay up for it, but it was just too late because they launched at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And they had, if you remember, when Tesla launched the Tesla Roadster, SpaceX launched the Tesla Roadster into orbit and had that kind of astronaut mannequin dude in there. Well, they had a new one, right? A new mannequin astronaut with all sorts of kind of funky monitors and everything to kind of measure what the impact is and what on human bodies. So they have a bunch of data coming back from it. But it was actually shaped like a person, had a spacesuit on. And this one was named Ripley. Right. So for old school folks who remember the movie Alien, Sigourney Weaver in Alien played Ripley, and she was the kind of main character in that. So that's where they named it from, which is kind of fun. The other thing that was cool that my daughter in particular really loved is that in the seat, kind of a couple seats over from where Ripley was sitting, they had a big kind of like Earth globe plushie, like with hands and feet and smiley, that was kind of sitting there. So as soon as they went into zero G's, the thing just is like floating around the capsule, right? And of course, SpaceX being SpaceX, they had cameras in there to monitor the whole thing, so you could actually see this little thing floating around. The capsule then the Crew Dragon successfully docked to the International Space Station, successfully opened it. The astronauts who are currently on the space station were able to go into the capsule after kind of showing. They took all sorts of readings to make sure the air was fine. Everything checked out great. And then it just returned successfully to Earth. So I guess there's going to be a couple more tests. And as soon as I think, like this summer, may have its first crewed mission. So pretty cool. Boeing is supposed to have its own version of this being coming up by sometime in April, but we'll see, because they, missions like this, SpaceX initially was supposed to launch this, I think, months ago. This always happens in terms of kind of space development, so we're looking forward to April to see what Boeing puts up, and but here, the Starship, I think, is what theirs is called. So that's number one. Kudos there. Go check out the video. Just kind of, I don't know, it's really fun. Canada this week announced its long-awaited space strategy. If you remember last week, we talked about, or I talked about, Sean watched his Twitter account, because but Canada officially was the first other country to sign on to the Lunar Glober platform, right? Basically the Lunar Gateway, rather. NASA has announced that it's basically going to put kind of like an International Space Station, but except it's going to orbit the moon, right? And Canada said, yeah, we're signing on to that initiative with the Canada arm, right? So the Canada arm is the one that kind of retrieves the satellites and kind of does all that stuff. But they've kind of gone one step further this week, basically saying, look, they put together this 22-page strategy memo that came out and said not only are they going to be looking at the Canada arm, but they're also going to do some serious investment in deep space robotics. artificial intelligence. So they're going to be kind of pushing forward and looking for, you know, asteroid mining, looking for that next thing once they get the Lunar Gateway established, where they're going to go from there. And Canada has kind of jumped in big time on that. So watch that. And then this one actually came from Sean. Sean sent this my way, and I had not seen this.
See, I pay attention.
Yeah, you do. I mean, sometimes things like, you know, float across your Twitter feed in front of your like view, and you're like, oh, hey, look at that.
What's that? It's like a satellite in space.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's a shooting star. But China is basically taking steps forward toward building the world's first ever solar power station in space. All right. And how does that work, say you? Right. Well, basically, the way that this functions is that you basically are going to put your solar collectors up in space, so it gets the maximum amount of sun onto the actual panels. And then what this looks like, it converts that energy into microwave radiation, right? And then beams the microwaves down to Earth, right, to a power collector on Earth in order to power things, right? So this is kind of like at the edge. This is kind of appears in science fiction, some science fiction here. But up until now, it has proven to be kind of technologically and financially not so much doable. However, China is throwing in a huge investment in terms of trying to make this happen. And of course, you know, the minute you start saying like, okay, wait a minute, so they're going to beam microwave beams down to the planet. I don't know about you, but one of the first things that I think is like, that's like Lex Luthor kind of shit. Right? It's like, we are going to be able to target people on the planet with giant microwave beams, right? That's not essentially how it's supposed to work, obviously, but there's a concern. There's going to be some tests coming up. They're going to start with some test balloons, some kind of low Earth orbit balloons that will go up and begin collecting it and seeing how this technology works. I mentioned in the intro today about this movie Quiet Earth. Check it out. There's this great movie. It was my favorite movie for a long time because it was just creepy. The movie is basically, the premise is that there's this guy, right? And it turns out there's a few people who are about to like be killed, right, and die, right, at this one point, right? One guy is being strangled by someone over like this, and then he wakes up, right, and doesn't know, there's nobody else around, doesn't know what happened, right, doesn't know kind of what's going on, and then goes back into the world, and there's nobody there, right? Everything's completely empty and quiet. And eventually you run into a couple other people, right, two or three other people along the ways, and as the story goes, as they get disgusting, they're basically saying each person, something had happened, right? And they realized that each of these people that had survived had died at precisely that moment where this event had happened. And it all has to do with this premise that there's this power network, right? And kind of like that orbits the planet, that something went wrong with that, that caused this event. So I was immediately brought back to that. So are we and that's a film from out of New Zealand too as well. So go check that out. It's kind of a fun film. It's actually kind of like very quiet and kind of a little disturbing and my kind of movie, but cool. Got some beer releases to talk about this week. Free Will is set to release its new first in its new brewer series. They're starting with a cream ale, right? Which is cream ale, you say? Is that Genesee beer cream ale? No, I'll give you their description here. This is how they have the post. This one's been a long time coming. Quote, our secret obsession, no longer secret, with this little unassuming, simply named yet often confused cream ale. This is a beer for you and a beer for the masses, a beer with nostalgia in mind and ultimately a desire to quench your thirst. Brewed with flaked maize and hopped with Czech saaz, to create a refreshing, easy-drinking ale that's crisp, clean, and always appropriate. Comes in at 5% ABV. And like I said, Hannah Godi is responsible for this one. So she's going to be at the forefront of launching this new brewer series. And they also have the return. I believe this is a return of the Tangerine Micromosa, a mimosa-inspired IPA with tangerines, hop mosaic, Cascade, Centennial, and Uconut. Is that what you say again? Yeah, whatever. One of those. So yeah. So and that's a if it's the one I remember, it's really really tasty. Like the tangerines really kind of come through, and it's a nice one. So both of those will be released tomorrow. That is Saturday, March 9th. Something to look forward to down the road. If you happen to be a runner, you like to engage in kind of little short runs and stuff, on March 24th, I believe, Free Will is going to be, basically having a 5K run. And you'll get a kind of a ticket for a free craft beer, runs around the Perkiomen Creek and outside Perkasie. So
are you signing up for it?
No, I number one, I hate the run. Like I've never even at when I was like you know, fully involved athlete, I hated running. I'm going to be more like looking at getting my knee repaired this summer. So last thing I want to do is rip it apart even more, because I think I tore a cartilage or something like this. I tried to see if it's been over a year. I'm sorry?
Arthroscopic surgery or?
We'll see. I mean, I've got to go see what it is. I've had injuries enough in my life, right? To, you know, it's okay. I thought maybe at first maybe it was just a tendon. So I kind of treated it like that, hopefully to kind of rule out some things, but it just hasn't come back. So I just got to bite the bullet and go to the doctor and see what's going on there. My dad has horrible knees just like me. And he waited until he was way, way, way too old, and he could barely, you know, shuffle around before he got his knee surgery. So if I have to get knee surgery, I want to do it at least when I'm healthy, so I can get back to it. So maybe next year. If I get it this year, maybe I'll make that a target for next year. So crazy. Anything else you got for the good of the order, Sean, for today's last call?
Nothing really. Bill Shine. He resigned.
Okay.
And it will be running Trump's campaign communications.
That's always good to know.
And then you saw the Dianne Feinstein video, yeah. I sent you earlier in the week.
Yeah, yeah, so talk through that one in case people haven't seen it.
Dianne Feinstein, as everyone knows, is a horrible human being. And the Sunlight Movement made a highlight of that when they sent a bunch of child activists into her room, into her Senate office, asking her about, supporting the Green Deal. And she said no, pretty much, and was pretty condescending about it. You know, the highlight show. And SNL did a parody of it, and it was awesome.
Hmm. Yeah, it was.
It was a really good SNL parody.
Yeah. It was fantastic. It was basically consisted of, you know, who was it who played it? Played her again?
I forget.
What's her name? But it's basically like Dianne Feinstein being unable to control herself from being an asshole to kids. Right? It's basically what it came down to. The premise is that she's trying to kind of put forward this video to kind of like make it all better after she fumbled with those kids before, and then she just can't do it.
I think the first line's the hook. Like the first joke. That's just like hooks you into the rest of the... rest of the skit, which was awesome.
Yeah, so go see that. The other thing this just kind of came through to as well is that Chelsea Manning was jailed today for refusing to answer questions from a federal grand jury in Virginia looking into the release of documents related to WikiLeaks. And the judge in that case, Judge Claude Hilton, told Manning that she would remain in federal custody, quote, until she purges or the end of the life of the grand jury, a statement from a representative said. So that's another story to kind of follow and see what's happening with that. Bill Shine. Yeah, there we have it. All right, well, I guess that does it, man. All I got left is, just a little bit of, I don't know. Well, there's you call it that. All right, you got anything going on for the weekend?
No.
Me neither.
Parents are coming up on Tuesday.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Visiting. So.
Oh, that's fun. This is actually my today is like the first day of my spring break officially, because I don't teach on Fridays. I do this on Fridays, so this is spring break week. which means next week will be filled with a lot of time of creating papers and going to doctor's visits that I haven't been in a while and things like that. Going to the dentist. So next week is just going to be...
Go to the free will.
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, I still have not regained my desire. Like last night I opened it. I had a bottle of this, I should have mentioned that before, this bottle of the kind of rum barrel aged special cookie, right? Kind of in the bomber. Right, and I didn't even finish. I didn't finish it. I was just like, I had it, and I was like, I was tired. It's like it was really good too, but I was like, just not feeling it. I think I'm actually, you know, I feel this. I get this way right about the time of the year too, as well. I said, like, I'm waiting for the summer.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's what it kind of feels like. It feels like, you know, I'm just like sitting around, kind of like watching whatever, like news at night or whatever, and having a beer, just not doing it for me these days. So I think I'm waiting for the summer.
I'm waiting for my lens.
Waiting for your lens. There you go. There you go.
I'm resisting the urge to buy it right now.
Yeah. You see, I'll. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I'm gonna say. I was trying to like. What are the odds? What are the odds that by next week this time you're gonna have that lens? Right. Or at least have ordered it by next week. You know. So I don't know. I don't know how I would put that at this point. I go back and forth on it. Yeah. So we'll see. All right, stay tuned to next week, guys, and we'll find out if Sean has actually broken down and bought his lens, whether actually something, you know, the rest of the state wakes up, and so Sean will have lots of news about what's happened in Pennsylvania. I don't know about that. Crazy. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for sticking with us today, folks, and we will be back next week. Same time, same station. Yep. See ya!
One more question for you guys. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, your thoughts?
She's a badass.
Man.
Oh, my God.
Yay!
I love her.
Yes.
Wow. A woman.
Amazing.
And again.
Yes. I mean, she's asking the right questions. I don't feel like she's playing games. I'm so excited about her. She is smart. She is intelligent. And I cannot wait to see what else she does.
Well, I know she's got the Democratic Party nervous. And I mean, in a way, they should be nervous.
Sure.
Because, you know, she does represent the new guard, the new generation. I think she really kind of personifies, you know, where we expected things to go.
She is the candidate of the future.